it's not one of those things where like the kid is born with the body image and like you had nothing to do with it. And these are things that are developed so early on. And that's why we wanted to look at the five-year-olds, because you are constantly modeling health or you're modeling unhealthy behaviors for your children. And you have to decide. And I know it's a lot of pressure. The big question is this. In a world of fake Instagram models and fad diets, how do real people achieve their fitness goals? We are an army of hardworking women changing their lives through fitness and health. Wherever you are at on your journey, we have the answers to how to make working out and eating well a part of your life. Join us in changing the dialogue for women everywhere. Welcome to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. I'm Kelsey.
Oh, okay. You're just starting.
I told you I was starting.
I'm just here for the ride. I'm Rachel, and I'm just here for this wild ride of what are we on to? Are we on 280 yet?
Somewhere around there. We had quite a few podcast episodes. I had to start our recording because sometimes Rachel and I just get talking and we're like, you know what?
Jesus, take the wheel.
We're just gonna turn it on and see what happens.
Oh, it's a weird day. It's a weird day. You're in mass and look at it. It's so reminiscent. Your lighting is great though.
Isn't it? These girls have it figured out. They set up these lights so nice. They have it worked out. They've got it down to a science.
Do you miss
left
Lucy?
On my own. I do miss Lucy. I got this fake gal back here.
Yeah, she doesn't compare.
Lucy's thriving. I also find myself like going into other people's houses and being like, oh, you got a plant there? I got a plant. Such a weirdo.
Yours looks a little dry. Mine's watered perfectly. Wow, you're gonna start judging people now on their
plant?
No,
but like I don't think I've ever like gone in and been like, oh, like that plant looks like my what's mine? What's its official name?
Fiddle. It's a fiddle.
So I've recognized fiddle. I'm like, they got a fiddle, I got a fiddle, there's a fiddle over there. Look at that fiddle like grow into the ceiling. We have a fiddle here in the office that's like thriving.
I love that. Oh, that's from my house. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I
she's
love that one.
Up to the ceiling.
Well, that CVG is like a greenhouse.
Yeah.
If anything you put in there, the amount of windows, it's just, yeah, it goes wild. It goes
wild.
But
like now I'm like a little plant lady. Like I'm like going around being like, oh, what you got there? See,
good
you're keeping
you.
It alive.
I see you're keeping it alive. Me too. So far.
Me too.
Well, I'm so happy.
I give her
for
the
you.
Spritz. I give her a spritz every day. I say, hi, Lucy. Give you a little spritzy spritz.
That's right. Remember I told you they love that?
Mm-hmm. I got
That's
a spritz
so
water
good.
Bottle.
Mm-hmm. That'll keep her leaves nice and shiny too. Now, if you want to go next level, they do have, I know this is going to sound a little over the top, but they do have leaf shine. It's like an actual thing, you know.
So
you
I'm
get
gonna
it
start
the,
like buffering her leaves.
No, you just get it at the depot. You put it on a little, like a nice little clean cloth, and you just like shine. It's this is not an everyday thing. This is just a like I to get her know. Ready for a party.
Oh, okay.
Or sure. To get her ready for like our big night out, her anniversary. Like you know, you just once in a while, you just shine the leaves, and it's like straightening her hair.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, I'll consider that. I don't think I'm there quite yet. I'm still proud of myself for giving the spritzy spritz.
Well, that keeps, I thought of it because that keeps their alive. Their leaves nice and shiny too.
Yeah, she doesn't even look like she's getting dry or anything. She looks like she's thriving. Mom suggested she might need to move like closer to the door with more sunshine. But
yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They do prefer it. And you know what's funny? She'll just start growing that way if you don't.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, they'll just reach. Yeah,
fiddles
are big reachers.
I love that for her.
Listen, I don't know if this is criminal behaviors. I don't know if I want to be admitting to this on in front of thousands of people. Is this
you know
criminal?
What?
Sometimes if I see... No, because it's
it's a thing where, like, I walk a lot and I walk along. And if I'm walking on trash or recycling day and I see somebody has put something obvious in the trash that belongs in the recycling, like, I just, I don't want to say I take it, but I I bring it to my recycling. I don't know. That's there's you no way that doesn't sound no that's there's no way it doesn't sound like criminal behavior, but like it's in their trash. I'm pretty sure it's ownership is 9/10 of the law. No, possession is 9/10 of the law. So like it's in their trash and then it's like in my hand and I put it because I just don't like that.
That's so crazy.
Wow.
You know what? But I'm so proud of you.
I won't do it with cardboard. I said to you, I won't do it with cardboard. Like if people have cardboard in their trash, I'm like, oh, that's a shame. But like, I know that's eventually going to dissolve in the rain and it will become one with the earth. But I can't just look at the plastic on the top of your trash like that. If it's on the top, I'm not going to dig. If it's on the top, I'm saying.
Oh, it was just on the top. I'm saying.
You made me say this. It sounds so much crazier out loud.
I mean, I heard it the first time. I thought it sounded crazy. But here's the thing. I think it's fun to admit some of our weird ass quirks that we do in this life, because everyone has these super weird things where you're like, why do you do that? And you're like, well, I don't know.
I just don't know. Why do I do that? I'm an eight and there's like a, what's that thing we have about injustices?
Yeah.
It runs so deep. So I'm like, it's the injustice of that.
Mm-hmm. And the injustices are like, I must take this.
Oh my God. Get over yourself, Rachel. Get over yourself, you psycho. Okay. So I'm really, really, really excited about today's pod. I think it's arguably one of the most important topics that we have done to date, because, you know, we talk to you guys, our friends, every week about the behaviors and the thoughts and all of the things that go into having a healthy relationship with your body and your nutrition. And what we really want to focus on today is how to, you know, we talk to you guys a lot about healing yourself, and now we need to pass that on to the next generation. We need to leave them better than we found them, similar to me picking up. I'm just trying to leave this place better than I found it. And here's the thing. Looking at the studies that have been done on future generations, right now we have some problems that we need to solve if we want the young girls coming up to have a better relationship with their body image, with the food that they eat, with exercise. We need to do better, because I don't love what I'm seeing from these studies, to be honest.
I definitely don't love what I'm seeing from these studies, but I also want to acknowledge, I'm going to say something real quick. Millennial women, you're freaking doing it. Like breaking generational curses, like just doing it. So as we start to talk about some of these studies and what we're seeing from the results, I just want to acknowledge the fact that every generation has come with their challenges, right? And their, you know, thing that they've passed on or that they've taken from the previous generation as far as like parenting, environment, especially body image. But as we've developed in the podcast, as we've brought on so many different guests and we've talked about body image, diet culture, and how every one of us has had to kind of break the chains of this diet culture having a hold of us and just body image issues really having a hold of our mindset. And it really got me thinking that even just acknowledging that it has had a hold of us has been the first step. If you're listening to this podcast, you've already taken many more steps since then, and you're really working on that language, and you're in the small percentage that is really changing how we start to talk about our bodies, how we treat our bodies, how we can love ourselves so much that we can treat our bodies well, and how we can then pass that on to the next generation. Because the previous generation told us that we have to shame and hate our bodies into being aesthetically pleasing. And the next generation is going to say, I'm going to love my body so much that I'm going to love it into health. That's a game changer.
Game changer. Imagine, you know, and like you said, there's no one I would more entrust with this task than millennial women. They are like, they are the ones. I mean, the things that we are seeing in parenting is it, like you said, these generational, really deep traumas are just being absolutely, and it's huge work. It's huge work, and there's mistakes every day. But the commitment to do better, there's no one I entrust more with this goal than millennial women. And I know that, you know, when we speak to women about the importance of this, they totally, totally get it. And that's why I think today's podcast is so important. It's just another reminder, and we're going to back it up with all these studies, another reminder of how important you are to how the next generation of women feels, looks, talks about their body, and how much influence you really have on that. And I, you know, today's podcast, we're going to review a study done on 5-year-old girls. And the reason we chose this study is really to specifically point out the how early this starts. It's hard to like look at this study sometimes because of the age of the girls being so young that it's like frightening, some of their responses on diet. But it's also important that we like know that this doesn't start at 10 years old where we start saying to girls, hey, you know, how about those body image norms, right? Like down with that. And that shit, we get to break that. Like they're listening at 5 and they already have ideas. And I think that's why we chose this study, is to say that there is no point in which you can't be paying attention to the messaging that you're sending.
Yeah. Well, as surprising as the language that they were using, some of these like 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, as surprising as some of the language they were using around diet culture, body image, as surprising as that was, it really wasn't, because like when you look at kids at a really young age, they're just like constantly being a sponge and they're picking up everything that's around them. They're mimicking it. They're looking at how you tie your shoes. They're going to tie their shoes. They're looking at how you walk, what you wear, like all of the things that you're doing. And that feels like a tremendous amount of pressure for a ton of parents, because you're like, oh Jesus, can I do anything? But it really is not what you're telling them. It's what you're doing. And that's so deep rooted, because they're just sitting there watching you how to be a human and trying to figure that out and then mimic what that looks like. And for a lot of young girls, and not to dismiss, you know, the experience from young boys, but as you'll see from some of the studies, it's just not affecting them quite as much. But from the experience from young girls is that they're watching normal behavior on how to be a woman have diet culture so rooted, so ingrained in everything that they do. What are you eating? How are you talking about your body? And like, that is just like, so how to be a woman is, you know, diet culture is just like threaded in with all of that. I watched this video. It was asking, this was a, like a, just a funny one. I'm sure you guys have seen it on the internet. It was asking some different kids what they would change about their body and when they were very young. And the age range was different. They had, you know, as young as 3, but they had as old as like 9 or 10. And they were just asking kids, like, what would you change about your body? And I believe it was in the UK. And the answers that the kids came up with was so amazing. It was like, some of them wanted a tail. Some of them wanted wings. Like, I think that I would want cheetah feet so that I could run so fast. They came up with all of these crazy things. And some of them even said like, nothing. I love my body the way it is. And it was just so pure that I wanted to share that aspect of it too, because they flipped to some of the adults and asking the same question. And the answers were so much less interesting.
So much less interesting and so much more conformist. Is that really what you want? Is that really what you would change? You could have cheetah feet and you're going for a smaller nose.
That's what I'm saying. My mind, I sat there and I looked at it and I was just like, these kids' answers. This one girl, I want a mermaid tail. And she just
yes,
was
so sis.
I was like, that would be great. I was like, a mermaid tail would be awesome. But then, like, you know, you get to the adults and they were just like, my stomach fat. Or like, and it was just like, ugh. Yeah.
Have you heard of mermaid tails or not? I mean, do you know about X-ray vision? Like, we have to have a talk.
We have to have a talk.
I mean, my God, you could have wings.
I'm saying.
Jesus. Yeah, I think, like you said, parental behaviors is really what we want to discuss on today's pod, and are they correlated with health compromising diet behaviors that later are going to affect young girls? We're going to give you examples of how mothers in particularly can positively and negatively affect their child's body image. It's not one of those things where like the kid is born with the body image and like you had nothing to do with it. And these are things that are developed so early on. And that's why we wanted to look at the five-year-olds, because you are constantly modeling health or you're modeling unhealthy behaviors for your children. And you have to decide. And I know it's a lot of pressure.
Well, I also just want to say, like, a lot of people, as they start to hear this, are going to, you know, think about the size of the child's body is going to depend on their like body image and whether they will develop like a positive body image or a negative, or everybody's like a negative body image. And that's just not true. And the body image that's developed mainly in childhood and adolescence is the experiential representation of one's appearance. So like that is how you experience your appearance. And it does not match the objective or physical reality of the body. So like that, it actually has nothing to do with the actual size of your body or the actual size of a child's body and like where it fits. That doesn't have to do it. It is the experience of that's what body image is. So how you experience your body and how you write your story. And we can really conceptualize this with thinking about how people have written their story at such a young age. I am this, I am this. And you hold on to that for so long throughout your life. And it's funny because we hear it in different ways where like someone will say something like, well, I just have like really large feet. This has happened to me recently. And I was like, your feet are totally like a normal size. Like they're like actually like an average size woman foot in the US. Like, where'd you get that? But like at one point in like this person's development, she had bigger feet than the rest of her body. She grew into this spot and she at one point internalized that story. I have really big feet. That carried her into her 30s. Like, we're like, no matter what evidence, she's a 7.5. It's literally the most common foot size like in the US.
All the size 11s are like, what?
Exactly. And I'm like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, no matter how much evidence throughout all of these years has literally backed up the fact that you have very normal sized feet. At one point you wrote a story of this is what I am and you kept that. And your experience has been that. No matter how many times you walked into a store and said, damn, they don't have my size again. Oh, it's because the most common size. Like, no matter what, like, we're still retelling this story. And that story is just so important when it comes to body image because it's developed at these childhood and adolescent ages that like once we decide that this is our story, it's really hard to break it. And so many women are just like nodding because like when you have developed the story at like a young age, like it's been really hard to break out of that. And we saw that when we started telling women, you know, you're an athlete, you're working out, you identify as an athlete. Like this is who you are. Like, I never thought of myself as an athlete. Since when? When did that decide for the rest of your life, whether you could be something or you couldn't, or when that was your story and you had to just reinforce it?
It's so wild when you think about it, and it's almost double the work because you could be fighting against a story you made at ridiculously young age, like 5, about your body image, simultaneously as fighting against passing that on to your 5-year-old daughter. And so it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, man. But that's how generational trauma is, you know? It's kind of a lot of work. But like, you have to know that the work is worth it. And you also have to know that working on yourself as a model is really truly the way. And the things that you say that are that you're not modeling, right? The right things to say, those just are not as powerful and as strong because they're similar to affirmations. You know, when you're saying those things, your kids know when you live it and you truly believe it and when you're just spouting bullshit. So that's why it's really important to do the double work, not just say the things like, oh, we love our bodies just the way they are. Why aren't you eating dinner, mommy? Mommy's on a diet.
Because I can't get rid of this belly fat. Like, follow it up with like what the actual actions are. So like we can, it's the same thing as mantras. Like we can go in and say like, well, we just love our bodies the way that they are. And you just, you want that so bad for your kids. So you just, you say that over and over, but your actions are really counteractive to that. Your actions are when you're standing in the mirror pulling apart your body, or when you're looking at the imperfections, or you're talking about your cellulite, or you're talking about how you just need to go to the gym because you've gotten so fat, or you need to stop eating so much because you're out so fat. Like that, when your actions aren't matching what we actually want, it's irrelevant.
I just want to say too, and I know that you hit on this briefly, but I just want to reinforce it, that the reason why we chose this study of 5-year-old girls is because girls are disproportionately affected by this messaging. And that statement does not mean boys are not affected. But what we are saying is we are not going to, in this particular podcast, we are not going to touch upon boys and their responses. They were not included in this study because we are focusing on the marginalized group here who is being disproportionately affected. And none of that means that there's no one else being affected. It just means we're going to take the bigger fish first. And, you know, I experienced this idea this weekend. I had my mother-in-law in town. She was visiting. And first of all, I just want to put out there that like I have a health and fitness podcast. I have for several years. I am the owner of a fitness company. People understand what we stand for. And my mother-in-law is so deeply ingrained in diet culture that it's like you wouldn't even associate her with anything that I say or do because she has years of trauma in this area. And she was visiting this weekend. And you know how when someone is around you full time staying at your house, it's like you get to know them on another level. And I can't even tell you the amount of times she referenced the 7 pounds that she lost and that she can't put that back on and that she can't eat these certain things because of the 7 pounds she lost. I mean, we had to hear about this 7 pounds that was probably like half of it was gut contents, but we won't even say, I couldn't have the heart, but it was so much that Mark and I looked at each other at a certain point and Mark said, at least he's not a girl, referring to my son, hearing this over and over and over throughout the weekend. And that statement is two things, totally fucked up, but also totally true. Rory is going to be less affected by the notes of, I have to lose 7 pounds, I need to, all of this, than a 7-year-old girl in the same situation. Studies have shown this over and over and over. I'm not making this up. This isn't like anecdotal, like, oh, my son's different. It's that just is the facts. And so it's so fucked up that we didn't correct her because we have a son sitting there. Because if we had a daughter sitting there, there would have been like an absolute, we're shutting that down. I don't want to hear any more about that 7 pounds. This is destructive. This is, and it's destructive for every gender, but it's just more. It's more for little girls. And that's why we wanted to focus on them with with this study. So do you want to get into a little bit of the nitty gritty of the study?
Yeah. So we did want to also say our other sister, Layla, did a lot of the research in this. And I know that it is, you know, she's a mother of an elementary age daughter too. And just kind of like checking in with some of the findings with her, like, you know, we're in this. We're talking about this all the time. We're trying to correct and adjust language. We're really trying to, you know, develop healthy habits, demonstrate healthy habits. And we know the effect that it has. And it's challenging for every one of us and still is shocking, some of these findings, because like, even if you know, you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Kids' ages 5 are talking about dieting, like that to me, like that's wild. So in one of the studies we looked at, it was 197 children and 5-year-old girls were asked questions to gauge insight into their emerging ideas, concepts, and beliefs around dieting. So the purpose of the study was to examine predictors and sources of influence of girls' ideas about dieting before the actual initiation of any dieting attempts. So their parents were also interviewed as part of the study, obviously, to see, you know, what the language was around dieting. So it turns out 5-year-olds were already subjected to diet culture and using some dieting language. So 13 of, you know, the sample size of 5-year-old girls interviewed reported that they were currently dieting at the time of the study. Currently dieting right then.
The whole point of the researchers using such a young age was they wanted to examine the predictors and sources of the influence of girls' ideas about dieting before they actually had any dieting attempts, right? We wanted to get them early enough that we could say, what are your emerging ideas about this concept before they had actually tried to put it into practice? And I just want to repeat that 5 years old was not young enough, because 13 of the girls were already saying, 13 of the 5-year-old girls were already saying that they were on a diet. So the 5-year-olds are preschool, guys, preschool and, and kindergarten. Would we need to get them before they could talk? Is that... how are we going to interview children who can't talk? But if you can't get them before their first initial dieting attempt, before age 5, that's so frightening on so many levels. I just, opening with that, I think is just kind of an indicator of the work that needs to be done, like literally from birth with young girls.
Well, here's the thing. It has to be done internally. It has to be done, actually done with us. If we have any hopes to change this language in the next generation, it has to be done. We can't fake our way through it. And it's not going to be perfect. It's definitely a work in progress. Finding alternative language to dieting, finding, you know, how to internalize what health is versus what dieting is, and how those two things are just not together. They don't coincide at all. And so I just want to say, like, the term dieting in the study refers to like a wide range of behaviors and strategies for weight control. So they either promote health or increase risk for health problems. So this is wide range of what we're talking about as far as dieting. But when it comes to like this, the phrase is for weight management, and none of weight and health are not the same, right? We've talked about this so many times during the podcast. We've built our whole messaging around it. So if we are promoting healthy habits, we're not talking about weight. So we're not talking about weight management. We're not talking about dieting. We're talking about how we can fuel our bodies appropriately, how we can build a healthy, strong foundation. And none of that would incorporate weight management. So I think they did a really nice job of kind of like defining the fact that like weight management, weight control was, you know, the dieting that we're using as language for these little people, because really, like, we're not talking about health, because when we're talking about health and we're talking about, like, can we, you know, eat foods that fuel our body? Are we demonizing foods? Are we just, are we talking about how we're going to build a healthy, strong body? It's going to run fast. It's going to jump high. It's going to take you through this amazing life. Like, none of that is weight management.
Oh, it's me. We're interrupting this podcast to tell you about the coolest leggings that have ever been on the planet ever. And if you are going to try to crush this new year, you need them. Why are you laughing?
You sounded like that kid. Have you ever had a dream where... Have you ever tried the best leggings and then they are sweatproof?
No, it's so true. Sweatproof, squatproof. They are so freaking comfortable and they have pockets. If you're listening to this podcast and you're not currently wearing our leggings, I gotta tell you, you are missing the boat, sis.
You're missing the boat. And the thing is, most people don't know as they start to get new leggings that not all leggings are created equal. Ooh. And you don't know that your leggings are see-through until you've been wearing them for a month at the gym and someone gets up the courage to tell you that they've been seeing through. Our leggings never see through, completely squat proof, sweat proof, and they stay up while you're working out. So grab a pair for this new year at constantlyvariedgear.com.
So I want to get into some of the answers from some of the little girls. Some you can find, obviously, like, it's like that show. Remember that show where they used to bring the little kids on and ask them questions and they just used to, like, absolutely embarrass their parents with their answers because it was just so awesome. Five-year-olds say some awesome things. So some of the answers were definitely comical in nature, and some of them were deeply disturbing to me as a woman trying to fight against diet culture and negative body images for women. And okay, so they asked them a couple questions. These are five-year-olds. They barely know the alphabet. What is a diet? 197 five-year-old girls answered in the following ways. 17% of the girls said it's some kind of restrictive eating. They didn't use those words. That was categorized by the interviewers, the researchers in this case. So if they said something that had to do with restricting your eating, it went into this category. That was 17% of them. 8% of that 17 said you can't eat at all. That's a diet. There's no more eating for you. You're all done. Sorry about that. 7% answered that it was a way to get skinny or to lose weight, and 55% said they did not know what a diet was. So only 1.5% said that a diet had something to do with exercise. So it's very interesting that a couple things I'm drawing from this. First of all, let's go with the positive. 55% of five-year-old girls studied did not know what a diet was. That's great. That's great. 100% I would like, that would be my goal, but 55% didn't know. The 1.5% that said it had something to do with exercise, two things could be at play here. Perhaps we have a mentality being pushed down that diet is dissimilar to anything having to do with health. Because I think if you ask most kids that are five how to be healthy, they would probably say something about exercise, right? I mean, that's a pretty common answer. I'm just guessing here. But when you ask them about diet, it's a very, very small percentage that associates it with exercise. So I thought that was really interesting. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting was the large majority of kids who did know what a diet was noted that you had to restrict your eating in some way, not that you were eating healthy food, that it was going to be less food or even no food at all. It's just eating's done for you. Sorry about that. You're on a diet.
I also thought it was very interesting that there was no when referring to like a diet, there was no real positive, honestly, there was no real positive answers about a diet. You know, I mean, maybe the 1.5 saying it's something to do with exercise, maybe, but aside from that, any answers that acknowledged what a diet was had to do with restrictive eating or ways to lose weight or get skinny. None of them had to do with any ways that we like fuel our body or like eat good food.
To feel the best, to run faster.
Yeah. You know, thinking about things that like maybe a 5-year-old would say, like thinking about like, oh, so that I can run really fast or something like that, where you think about like some more positive answers to, you know, what you're consuming. But they definitely all had to do with weight loss. They all had to do with restrictive eating.
Very interesting. When asked, what do people do on a diet? This is so, some of these are so, so telling. All right. So we're going to categorize the answers under either modifying your eating behaviors or restricting your eating behaviors. Most of the answers fell into those two categories, and then we're gonna like break those out. But when asked, what do people do on a diet? 19% of kids noted some kind of modified eating behavior. This included like 5%, most of them, 5% said that you gotta drink a shake. When you're on a diet, it's liquid only for you. They said something about that you had to move to drinking shakes for some reason. 3% of them said that you have to drink diet sodas in order to be on a diet. And 4.6 of them said you got to eat more good things or healthy foods. So out of the kids that noted modified eating behaviors as what people do when they're on a diet, more of them said that you have to drink a shake than said that you would want to eat more healthy things. Mm-hmm. My God. My God.
The detox teas have taken over. I mean, are we surprised? The marketing is so strong in diet culture, and it's just like, if you find some way to eat a shake to get skinnier or lose weight, like combining both of these answers, right? So like somehow you have some type of restrictive eating, you don't eat at all, or you eat a shake in order to get thinner or lose weight. Like combining those, that's essentially what's happening. Which is like break it down. Like that is diet culture though. These are brilliant answers because like that is diet culture.
These are brilliant answers because I think that most adults would answer in these same ways. I'm not joking. They're not getting these answers from nowhere, right? I feel like if you did the same poll and you said, what do people do on a diet to most adults? I think a very similar amount would say, you got to start on a shake.
Yeah.
Yeah, less, you gotta, yeah. Shake. Now, when asked what do people do on a diet, 18% of the answers went under the restrictive eating behaviors. So modifying your eating behavior is things like, okay, I'm going to drink a shake instead of a meal. I'm going to drink diet soda instead of regular soda. I'm going to add more good things, healthy things into my eating regimen. But restrictive eating behavior had responses like, 8.6% of the kids said you don't eat anything. That's what people do on a diet. They don't eat. They also said that you cook for your kids, but you don't eat that food, which I think, again, this is, see it through their eyes, right? So many women, when they're on a diet, will cook one thing for their family and then will sit down to a sad salad, right? The family gets to eat lasagna and how come mom, you're not having any lasagna? I'm too fat. I'm on a diet. So I have to eat the sad salad. So, I mean, by 5 years old, this is already being noticed to a point that, you know, 8.6% of the kids are saying that the moms just cook the food for the kids and then they don't eat it. 4.6% said you don't eat that much. You only eat a little bit. Extremely small portion sizes. And then 3% of the kids that were in this category said that you don't eat any fat. You have to eat no fat at all, less fat. So let's just break that category down.
Peter was going to be so disappointed that they didn't say arms. It's like, oh.
They're going to up their marketing budget like 10,000%. They're going to be like, all right, how do we get to those five-year-old girls? We want the answers to be no carbs.
No carbs. So these answers are definitely very telling, and they just have nothing to do with what you have told your kids about a diet. And I thought that that's really where I wanted to highlight some of these answers, is because, like, you know, a lot of people will say, like, yeah, well, I go on a diet, but I tell my kids, like, you don't need to worry about that yet. Or, like, that's not for you. You don't need to worry about that. And that is honestly, according to these studies, absolutely irrelevant, because what you demonstrate and what you say are not matching up. And when little girls are looking at the behaviors of mothers, and, you know, I'd like to say part of the study did look at the fact that this is, a lot of these behaviors are disproportionately affected by the mothers, and that the impact of some of the fathers is just not relevant. And I don't want to say, like, to the guys, like, you're not relevant. What I'm saying is that kids recognize when they're looking that these are two different bodies. And when we're talking about a body, I'm looking at this one because that body is what my body will eventually be. I'm a girl. If you have a girl who identifies as a girl and you see a woman, they're saying, like, I'm a girl and eventually I will be a woman. And this is what I will do. This is what my body will do. So when I talk about my body, it's in the language that my mom talks about her body. Because that's how I'm going to talk about my body eventually. So, like, I don't want to downplay the impact of, like, you know, language that fathers can have. But when it comes specifically to body image, we know the bodies are different. They can see that. They know what the hell is going on there. So when you think about, like, what my body will do, what it will look like, how do I treat it, what do I eat, I'm looking at her.
And to prove that, this study completely backs that up wholeheartedly, because when we turn around and go and interview the parents, right, over 90% of the moms in this study reported recent dieting. 90%. We're taking 197 parents of five-year-old girls, and we're saying, how many of you moms have been on a recent diet? And 90% are saying yes. Most reported using both health promoting and health compromising diet behaviors. So we had women admitting to doing things that were health compromising, that they knew were health compromising. And we had women saying, you know, I'm dieting in a way of adding, I'm trying to add more exercise, or I'm trying to add more healthy foods and health promoting behavior. So it was both. But compared to the girls whose mothers did not diet, girls whose mothers reported current or recent dieting were more than twice as likely to have ideas about dieting. So, I mean, obviously, right? Obviously, you're modeling the behavior at home, and then they're forming their ideas about what you're modeling as far as that behavior. But when we look at this being five-year-olds, that's where I think it starts to be an aha moment, because of course, I think people are thinking, of course, you know, your 9 and 10 year old is modeling what your behavior is and trying to look to be a woman. And like little kids, they're not concerned about that. They're not paying attention to that. They're playing with dolls and they're sucking their thumbs and watching freaking Cocomelon. This is the age, guys, that we're talking about. And actually, they're more than twice as likely to already have ideas about dieting if you've reported recent dieting. So it's gotta be in your mind that from birth, these girls are super impressionable when it comes to these areas.
100%. I do want to hit on, like, how can we adjust this language? Essentially, what does it look like? But not even how can we adjust this language, but how can we adjust some of the behaviors? And I think that that coincides with how can we adjust some of this language. And I know you guys you're here, you're listening, you're in the 3%. You know what I mean? Like, you're already there and you're already working on your inner dialogue, and you're working on so much when it comes to promoting health and kind of, like, undoing all of these behaviors that have just been so historically detrimental to your body image. I know you're working on your body image, and I know that you're struggling with what the language looks like of how can we adjust this and how can we really start to ingrain it, like, in our minds to really change that over from diet culture to health promoting and changing the body image issues. And the first thing I'd like to acknowledge, what Rachel kind of brought up at the beginning of this episode, is that people in your life, and God, we know our mothers have had body image issues, our mother-in-laws are, you know, have had this language that was really difficult to change or adjust or to really work on. And that's going to be, you know, on repeat. And that's going to be a battle in its own of like, how can we address some of that? And how can we talk about the fact that, like, no, we're not, we don't talk about our bodies like that. We don't talk about dieting like that. We definitely don't reference weights in that way, because that is not promoting health behavior. That's promoting body image issues. That's promoting eating disorders. That's promoting this disordered thinking that leads to eating disorders. And telling people that the language that they've used throughout their entire lives is essentially promoting eating disorders is a really difficult conversation. But if you can have it honestly, you can recognize the fact that most people have had some form of an eating disorder several times throughout their lives. And we are hoping to stop that here. So in order to do that, we have to try something that we've never done. And we have to stop that same language that we see from generation to generation, where we constantly talk about our weight, where we constantly talk about our thighs and our cellulite and our midsection fat. And we talk about how we have to diet and how we can't have that food. I know that's delicious and I really want it, but we can't have that. And we have to reframe it into the choices that we're making being for health. There's not good food. There's not bad food. We're not saying like, this is, I'm being good. So I'm eating a salad. That's one of those. Let's stop that. You're not being good.
So let's give an example. Let's say that you are going to feed your family lasagna and you are choosing to have a salad for your meal for some reason having to do with health. Okay. Rather than, let's answer the question differently, right? So because the scenario is going to continue to happen, it's really just about the response, I think, that makes the big difference. Mommy, why are you, how come you're not having lasagna? Oh, mommy's body is really needing vegetables right now. And so mommy made a big plate of vegetables so I can get the nutrients that I need. Mommy's body is asking for nutrients right now. And this is what it needs. That turns that whole, you don't have to, you know, if you want your salad, have your salad. Right? But that turns the conversation into one about feeding your body what it needs rather than restricting it from the things it wants. And I think that that can make a really big difference when it comes to ideas about dieting for little girls being changing into things that their body needs rather than restricting things that it wants. And this whole thing then carries on because we have this whole entire patriarchy set up under this guise of that women can't actually say what they really want. They have to constantly be in need and desiring and lacking the pleasurable things that they actually want. This is like set up right from the get-go with, I can't have that food. Mommy can't have it. Everybody else can because I'm constantly in dire need of the pleasurable things and you guys always get to have them. And it changes that right off the get-go. And it uses food, but like it can translate into other things. Let's give another example. Why are you exercising?
Well, I always think that this is, you know, this is a layup because these are the easiest ones for me is like, but I want to use when it says like, when I'm going to say like, because I love to feel good in my body, exercise makes me feel good. I would love to translate that into food as well. I would like to have this meal today because I'm going to really feel good. And using language that describes how we are personally feeling is switching it up, right? Because like we're constantly, kids are in a developmental stage where they're looking to identify what they actually are feeling, what they want, how to express their feelings. And when you are demonstrating that and saying like, this makes me feel good. Exercise makes me feel good. This meal is going to make me feel good today. You're turning that into like, these are the things that I've identified will make me feel good. What are the ones that make you feel good? You know, like they can start thinking about what the possibilities are that do make them feel good. And exercise is an easy one for that because, like, you know, I love the answers to get strong, to be able to keep up with you.
I tell my son all the time, I have to go to the gym so I can still beat you in a race.
Yeah.
You're never, ever going to beat mom in a race. So don't even think about it.
And Rory is, I mean, an exception in a lot of ways because he has been around a lot of his language for so long, but he gets in his mind, you know, he was at one point training to beat me in a race. And he's saying, Angie Kelsey, I think I'm ready to race you because, like, you know, I'm an auntie. So, you know, I can be the coolest person sometimes. And apparently the fastest at one point.
Oh, no, he knows you're the fastest and he wants to take that place in the family. He's very aware that the fastest in the family is Auntie Kelsey. And, like, that doesn't sit well with him. So he's training to be able to be the fastest in the family. Just take that spot from you.
But imagine, take that mindset for a second and think about the difference between going, having to go to the gym, running on the treadmill to get thin, to get smaller, to lose weight, or to beat your fastest person in your family. That shift is so amazing because it moved into something that is there to set the groundwork to create a lifestyle that is built around fueling your body and feeling good and feeling fast and living essentially in an actually healthy body that can do things and just ingraining the understanding that, like, this is my body that helps me do everything in this world. It helps mama goes to the gym so she can keep up with me, so she can still beat me in a race, so she can still pick me up. All of these things that you can do instead of, I have to go there because I hate myself. I do these things because I love myself, I love you, and I love our life. That's a big shift.
I envision a new study in which the kids surveyed say, I have no idea what a diet is, but I know that when my mom eats vegetables, it's because she wants to give her body healthy nutrients and vitamins. And when she works out, it's because she wants to be so strong to pick me up. And I just envision this new study, and it's a game changer. It's a game changer for moms. It's a game changer for girls. It's a game changer for kids. Boys are not being looked at in this particular study, but here's the important thing about them. When they say things like, when Rory says to his friends, my mom works out because she wants to beat me in a race and she wants to be the strongest mom ever and things like that. It really, this is a societal thing, right? We have young boys who believe that women work out to be aesthetically pleasing to them and smaller and thinner. And we now have this weirdo kid who's going around saying, my mom is working out to make her muscles the biggest she can so that she can pick up heavy things and she can always pick up me even when I'm a man. He says, when I'm a man, my mom will still be able to pick me up because she goes to the gym. These ideas filtering through boys is also really imperative. So I don't want the moms of boys to feel left out here. Because, like, you know, we said in the beginning, they're disproportionately not as affected by this messaging. They're more affected by their father's messaging with regards to body image and fitness and nutrition. But, like, planting those ideas is wildly effective in paving the road for girls to be able to say those things without socially unacceptable, you know, like, what do you mean?
Well, it's taking it from a singular. So we're starting at a singular place where, like, who is disproportionately affected by body image issues? Like, this is the population, it's girls. But then when you take it a step further and you kind of step back a little bit and you take it into more of a societal standpoint where, like, what is the general language that we're using and how is that continuously affecting girls and women as they age, as they get older. And you don't leave out half the population when you start to introduce that language. Like when you, because we're all in it together. So yes, of course, like women, what you're modeling for some of your sons is going to shape how they are internalizing a women's bodies, how we talk about women's bodies, how we respect women's bodies. And they're not there for us to, for our viewing pleasure here, to get smaller, to just be aesthetically pleasing. And that's the only reason why women go to the gym. Having young boys start to think about the fact that, like, you girls are strong and they run really fast. They eat things that fuel their body so they can run really fast, so they can, be strong and be healthy. And just looking at a society where we're talking actually about health is the fucking game changer, because we start to talk about health from the reality of health, not from this patriarchal standpoint of like, get smaller, eat less, and this is going to disproportionately affect women and young girls, and then we're all going to play along.
So I know that one of the lasting questions that people will have is, it has to do with so much of the society points of view, because you can say, you know, whatever you want in your own house and you can lay the groundwork for these things, but eventually they're going to go outside of your house and they're going to hear things that does not follow this messaging. And clearly what we've seen from this study is that the vast majority of these five-year-old girls were being exposed to messaging that could be potentially damaging. So what do we do when it comes to, we can control what we can control, right? I don't have the answer for this, but I do have the fact that my son has come home and has reported that his teacher can't, you know, I think I sent in something for a holiday party and he said, oh, well, Miss Wagner is not going to eat these because she's on a diet. And so obviously this has been said to them. And obviously this was not a factor that I could control. And I said back, oh, you must mean that she's wanting to gain some health. And some of those sugary foods and treats and candies, they're good sometimes, but she probably feels like they don't make her body feel great. And so it doesn't feel like a healthy choice to her to eat those right now. I didn't know what else to say. I don't have the answer on this one, but all I can say is sometimes it does feel hopeless when your kid comes home with the opposite messaging as you've been trying to push. But having a prepared answer is always helpful, and always having some kind of backdrop of, if the teacher says she's trying to lose some weight, you counteract that with, oh, she must be trying to gain some health.
I love switching that into something that can be gained instead of what we're losing, because that's what, you know, what we talk about all the time. And I really feel that if we can continue to structure how we're talking with how I feel, it's only beneficial for the kids to understand that, because we tell this about them when they're trying to navigate all of their emotions. How do you feel right now? Just because everybody else is sad doesn't mean you're sad. How do you feel right now? So how does this food make you feel? How does this, you know, type of thing make you feel? And as soon as we can start to like develop some ownership and some management of our feelings, then we really incorporate the fact that like the foods that we eat, how we treat our body is based on how we want to feel. So we're making a choice to like, I want to feel good and this makes me feel good.
It's such a different landscape when you turn it into a choice and not this, I guess, penalty, something that you're being penalized for because your body doesn't look or appear a certain way. And so you're now under this penalty. It's so different when you say, I'm not eating this sad salad because I'm so fat that I have to have this penalty now. I'm being punished. It's so different when you say, I'm making this choice. I don't have to have this. I'm choosing to have this. And the reason why I'm choosing to have it is because it makes me feel great. And I know what I need to feel great. And I'm making a choice here. And eventually, I feel so hopeful that this can happen under the right circumstances. And we don't have to say, okay, we're no longer going to make our health a priority because that could be damaging for our kids. Like, oh, I can't ever eat something and say like, well, I'm eating something different from you guys because I have different goals, or I can't ever exercise because like, well, I don't want my kids to think, because all of those things, they belong there. They just belong there under the right context. It's all about context for kids. It's all about, is this a penalty for you because you've been bad? Or is this something, a gift that you're giving to yourself that you're choosing? And it's so empowering rather than this like weird, you know what I'm saying?
That we're all going to eventually do.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's just like this lingering thing that we're all going to eventually do. And it really takes the choice out of it. It takes the feeling out of it, because it just becomes this inevitable diet that we're all going to just slide right into. When you take it out of that context and you say like, this is a choice. And as your kids trust your choices all the time, you say like, this is what they like blindly trust them. They blindly trust. And you say like, well, I feel this way. And they say, like, oh, okay. You know, they want to explore that a little bit. When you take it, this is a feeling and this is a choice away from the fact that like, well, mommy just has to diet. It becomes a different conversation, because as they learn and grow, they understand that all of our choices are different and our feelings are different. So we have to make choices and feelings based on what we're feeling in our body. And they're not just something that we slide into because like society tells us, this is what we need to do. This is what we need to look like. This is how thin we need to be. And all girls go on diets when they get to this age. No, no, no. That's not it anymore.
Imagine a whole entire group coming up that said like, I make decisions based on how much I exercise and what I eat based on how I feel and not based on how everybody else feels. Whoa. You guys, I know that some of this has been difficult to hear when you think about kids that age and you think about some of those responses. It is difficult to hear, but it's so necessary. And I hope you guys can go out and use some of these strategies on you don't have to be a mom of girls. That's the thing. It's everywhere. It's literally everywhere. So I hope you can go out and find ways to just plant these little seeds, because as we talked about with Eileen, like, it's the seed. It's just the option being there sometimes. That's enough. You don't have to go on a soapbox. It's just that little seed saying like, hey, there's another way. And, people are going to grab for it. Little girls will.
They absolutely are. All right, guys, we love you. Have a great week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Thick Thighs Save Lives podcast. If you'd like to join our movement, get in our free app, CVG Nation, available in your app store. We have an amazing community of women, coaches to help you with your movements, challenges, and we give away leggings daily in there. Rachel and I are in there every day, so it's a perfect place to get in touch with us. This podcast is made possible by Constantly Varied Gear, so be sure to check out constantlyvariedgear.com. Have an amazing week. Crush your goals.